Spark Media presents Cosmic Creatures by Jason Kent Nord. Performed for you by Adam Anagnostou, Mike Kelly, John Yonker, and Luke Langfeld. Sound design by Dan Steffens. This episode contains content that may be alarming to some listeners. Please check the episode notes for more detailed descriptions. And now, episode 14, Frequency.
I reach the McDermott's driveway, the first in our little cluster of homes, and am once again shaken. As I approach, their trash bin stirs with life. A beast within reacts to my presence by snarling, hissing, and thrashing about, rattling a lid barely held in place by a hose wrapped around the whole bin. Sharp claws poke out from a narrow gap under the lid, but the hose prevents the nasty beast from escaping. There's nothing like being the target of a ferocious creature to give a guy one hell of an adrenaline rush. I decide to use the jolt to sprint toward home. I don't get far before a terrible sight greets me. Past the Higgins place, and through the haze lies a burnt and devastated landscape. Where familiar trees once stood, now only broken and charred trunks remain, reduced to varying, diminished heights. Embers litter the ground, sending up wisps of smoke that dissipate into the hazy shroud blanketing the scene. I rush toward the nightmare in disbelief, hoping, no, begging to find it's not real. But it's all too real. It's all too goddamn real. Increasingly distinct burnt odors and fumes only confirm as much. I can't believe what I'm seeing. The house. It's gone. It's been reduced to rubble and smoldering tinder. My foot slips, forcing me into a painful contortion to avoid falling. The cause of the slip is soon evident and grotesque. The pavement is covered in a pool of drying blood. My boots swipe and recovering steps leave freshly exposed bright red streaks amidst the dark and tacky swath of pavement. The scent of iron joins the other foul tangs. My eyes follow the trail of death toward the trees and bushes next to the Altman home. Something was killed here and dragged off. Should I go look? What are the chances it was Kale? No. Impossible. And yet, the dread of the unholy possibility weighs on my soul. My heart pounds frantically again, on the brink of arrest. It feels like I'm about to fracture for the final time. Like this could be the end. No, I mutter aloud. No, it can't be. Kale is fine. It's got to be something else. I push forward, too consumed with the need to find out to worry about being quiet. The grim thoughts vanish as I spot it. Protruding from the bushes is a hoof. A detached and fractured horse's leg is tangled in a twisted knot of thick bush that's been trampled by whatever creature dragged it through here. As alarming as the sight is, and as terrifying as it is that the culprit of such a feat may be lurking nearby, I'm mightily relieved that it's just a horse, as bizarre as that is. What the hell is happening? I turn around, wipe my still slippery feet in a patch of undisturbed grass, and head back toward the Higgins place and what's left of my home. Kale! I call out involuntarily, then immediately regret it. What am I thinking? Some creature could hear me just as easily as Kale if he's even here. The Hagen house is dark except for a strange, dim light coming from the garage, moving around. I quickly proceed up the driveway to check it out, only to be stopped by another gruesome sight. Next to the garage lies the carcass of some large animal. It looks like a huge, stout lioness with massive hindquarters. A dried, rusty orange substance stains its cracked open skull. The blood trail leads to the driveway beneath my feet, which seems to have been hosed down but still feels faintly sticky as I cross over it. Approaching the garage windows, I brace for what's next. The repetitive horrors, though, have begun to desensitize the terror of anticipation. Inside, a live, furry critter moves oddly around the garage. It looks up at me. Though it's silent, it looks like it's chattering away at me. Scanning the garage, I half expect to find the remains of Kale or the Hagens kids. Holy hell, I grumble under my breath. Kale, I hope you weren't here for all of this. And then that sickening feeling hits me. Maybe he was at home. I pull away from the garage and sail through the charred landscape to where our house once stood. The foundation is wiped clean, save for some remnants attached to mangled plumbing. Water sprays and trickles, creating a soup of burnt debris. I scour for any sign of Kale. Flipping over a chunk of siding, I recoil at what I uncover. It's the burnt remains of one of those bizarre three-legged bird creatures from my encounter in town. They were here! They were at my home when the bomb was dropped! I can't help but picture them hunting down Kale, just like that little boy on the tricycle. Why else would they be here? I grow dizzy and drop onto my ass. Reeling amidst the ruins of my life, the tears pour out. Kale's dead. Oh, God. He's dead.
Nick and Fitch struggle to pull the generator along the rough terrain. It's remarkable how easily one can step over rocks, sticks, depressions, and other small obstacles when walking freely, but how incredibly cumbersome they all become when dragging something heavy. I keep wanting to help, but there's only space for two people to pull it. At certain narrow points along the trail, Nick has had to hand the shotgun to Fitch and pull the generator alone. Up ahead, I notice a log blocking the path. It's not massive, maybe the diameter of a frisbee, but it's too big to move, and dragging the generator over it will definitely be a major pain. I scan the darkness for an alternate route and spot a decent option. "Hey, guys," I quietly direct. "Let's detour through there, and then back to the trail." The route goes around the uprooted base of the tree, circling a thick patch of bushes, and it's only intermittently covered with some low ferns. "I'll check it out," Ellie volunteers, eager to lend a hand. She jogs over and examines the ground. Obviously tired of her load, she sets down the crate and slips off her backpack, placing them out of view. She seems eager to expedite progress with the generator, which has been slowing us down. "Yeah, it'll work," she confirms. "Let me handle it." Fitch steps aside, and Nick allows her to take over before they silently agree that they both should pull. Fitch and I follow, as they progress along the slight downslope to the roots of the fallen tree. I then opt to move ahead of them to clear any sticks or rocks from the path. Reaching the upturned roots, Ellie and Nick pause for a breather. We all fall quiet, even the worn-down Fitch. After a moment of stillness, a twig snaps, startling us as we all realize something's approaching. We scramble for cover. Fitch dives into the crater made by the displaced roots. Ellie drops under the fallen trunk, and Nick and I dive for the thickest cluster of ferns and bushes. The footsteps are approaching from the trail up ahead. I can't see what it is. The thick bushes block our view. Nick readies the shotgun and repositions himself. I put my hand on Nick's shoulder to stop him and lean in to whisper. "Not now. Stick with the plan." We both lower into motionless crouches. Engaging a creature now and starting to shoot might attract more creatures prematurely. I need to get prepared first and execute a trap, not fall into one. At the cave, we can hopefully capture most of them, and hopefully, we'll only need to engage a few and do so in a prepared manner. Unfortunately, this thing is moving away from the cave. I hope it doesn't go too far. Or maybe I do. My nerves start to fray and a tingle runs up my spine. The severity and reality of what we're going to attempt hit me hard. I've got to rise to the occasion, though. We're the only ones out here who can do anything. It would be nice if the military would send some help, but I doubt it. As the intruder nears and passes by our location, it sounds of multiple footfalls. Are there more than one walking together? It sure sounds ungraceful. Then, it occurs to me that it could be Exhibit 31, the larger cousin to that sickly bundle of twigs we encountered earlier. From the scan, it looked like it had 7 tree-like limbs, but it would be at least 12 feet tall. I peek upwards above the obscured trail, hoping to catch a glimpse of its top, but see nothing. The sounds fade off toward the way we came. We all start to breathe again and rise from our hiding spots, each a bit wide-eyed. "What the hell was that?" Fitch whimpers. "It sounded like a group of them." "I think it's this one," I say, retrieving the worn and bloodied list from my back pocket, unfolding it, and turning to Exhibit 31. "Are you sure I shouldn't have shot it?" Nick asks. "Would have been one fewer to deal with." "Maybe. But none of us were prepared. And if it took multiple shots and the gunfire attracted more creatures, it could have escalated dangerously. We gotta stick to our plan and go get set up. Maybe if we can get down to a few big ones, the military will finally show up and deal with them." They all just look at me for a beat, taking it in. "Better to be prepared, right?" I add. "Yeah. Let's get moving and get set up," says Ellie, jumping back to the task of pulling the generator. We finally arrive at the cave, tired but determined. Throughout the journey, I've been troubleshooting the plan in my head, trying to work out the details. It's far from perfect or safe, but I think it has a fair chance of success. "What's the plan?" Nick beats me to the point. "Okay. We'll put the generator over by the side of the cave behind that rock and cover it with branches. The Christmas lights and party lights will be in the back of the cave to draw them inside. We'll set up the sound equipment closer to the mouth of the cave, playing an infrasound recording. I don't want it back too far so it doesn't get muffled. We'll use the fireworks and infrasound to draw them near. And hopefully, the lights will attract them all the way in once they arrive. If we have enough extension cord, I want to set up the strobe back there facing the front of the cave, so I can turn it on to push any lingering creatures out in the open to retreat inside. I'll also be stationed there with the dog whistle. So, hopefully, we get a nice push-pull setup to drive and draw as many as possible into the trap."
"Yeah, but how are we going to keep them inside?" Ellie queries.
I smile. "An electrified fence." Nick looks unconvinced.
"That would mean it would have to be open when they get here, and closed after they go inside."
"Yeah. What are we going to do? Carry it into place and electrocute ourselves?"
Fitch chides.
"No, dude, listen," I say, slightly annoyed. "This is the trickiest part. We are going to run wires that are as long as the cave is tall between the two pipes, each set a few inches apart, and then we are going to roll it up and secure it above the cave opening. When the time is right, someone will unroll it and let it drop down to cover the entrance."
"But we can't touch it," Fitch objects.
"I'm assuming we plug it in after it's unfurled," Ellie clarifies. Oh, Fitch concedes. Yeah, that makes more sense.
And then what? Nick asks.
Well, hopefully they'll all be in the cave. But realistically, we have to figure that a few will be left out here. Which means we're gonna have to use the shotgun, crossbow, and BB gun to take them out. Nick, you'll be by the generator, with the shotgun and focused on the largest creatures. Ellie, you and I will be over there. I point where the strobe light will be. I'll focus on the smallest creatures with the BB gun. And you'll use the crossbow for the medium.
Hey! I get the crossbow!
Fitch objects.
No.
She's used one before. I firmly insist. You haven't. Fitch whines.
Come on, man, that's not fair.
Then after a huff or two, adds sullenly.
What am I supposed to even do then?
You're going to be up above the cave, I reply. You'll unleash the fence and stay up there while you'll be safe. Hurl rocks at them, scream to distract them, anything. As long as you stay up there. Unless you'd rather be down here, having them charge at you.
I can use a crossbow from up there, he challenges.
No, you won't have an angle if they are standing by the cave entrance. And the tree canopies will block your vision of anything coming from within the woods. Down here is better because there could be stragglers coming from any direction. For a moment, he has no retort as he understands that I've got this figured out.
But how do I get up there?
He asks sheepishly. I guess that's something I hadn't really considered. I can get up there pretty easily, but I'm lean and have been climbing it for years. Ellie and Nick could also handle it, but Fitch isn't exactly well suited for the task. Let's get set up first, and then we'll figure it out, I reply, eager to get started. I'll do it, Ellie says reluctantly. It'll take two of us to climb up to get everything in place anyway. I'll stay up there once it's done.
Ugh. This notion worries me.
Part of me rationalizes that maybe Fitch will be less hesitant to actually shoot any creatures. I know Ellie is generally reluctant about that. I don't want to kill any either. But we all know it's got to be done when it's not avoidable. Ellie would be far more competent with the crossbow than Fitch. But I guess she'd be safer up top. Whatever, I defer. Fitch, you set up the lights. I'll set up the sound equipment. You guys start working on the wires. The pieces are in place. I feel good about it. And I also don't. Are we completely insane for trying this? But what else are we supposed to do? Hide and wait for more bombs to kill us? Ellie is atop the cave with a large leafy branch for cover, so creatures don't fixate on her when they arrive. Fitch and I found a spot between two trees with some good thick bushes covering our backsides, and others to crouch behind. Nick has a spot figured out next to the generator. Okay, I begin. As far as we know, 25 of the 37 are accounted for, so we could be facing up to a dozen of them. You guys want to run through of what's left? In unison, Ellie and Nick reply with a yeah, while Fitch gives a hearty no! We've got Exhibit 13, which is that fast little flying thing that smacked into the window at the lab.
Doesn't help me, Fitch mutters.
Exhibits 14 and 15 look like weird tropical birds. I make eye contact with Fitch and retort to his prior remark. You did see those, after the bomb dropped. Fitch rolls his eyes. Exhibits 19 and 20 are like flying stingrays, and one is about twice the size of the other. Exhibit 23 is that rhino-headed thing that bashed down the door at the lab. Catching myself, I add for Fitch's benefit, and which we saw the last time we were here.
Rhino basher. Got it,
he says flippantly. I go on. Then there's this little hunched-over mini-gorilla that's about 2 to 3 feet tall. That's 26. Next, 30 is a small turtle-like thing. Exhibit 31 is that tall thing with all of the limbs that we avoided on the way here. And 33 is that big bladed thing that killed the horse. The leafy tigerish thing that chased the deer was 35. Lastly, 37 is another one of those awful things that suck the blood out of Officer Lutz. So, 4 massive killers, a bloodsucker, and a bunch of unknowns, Fitch surmises. Great. No problem. Nick, go ahead and start the generator. I'll make sure the infrasound is transmitting, and then Fitch and I will light the fireworks. Now this is the most important part. When the creatures gather, I will signal with a whistle.
But we can't hear the dog whistle,
Fitch challenges. I'll actually whistle with my mouth, I reply. Nick, that will be your signal to plug in the strobe. On my second whistle, Ellie, that will be your cue to unfurl the wires. Nick, do not plug in the wires until my third whistle.
Yeah, please don't electrocute me,
Ellie emphasizes. Yes, and please don't electrocute yourself, Ellie, I say. Do not touch any part of the pipe or wire after that third whistle. After that third whistle, Nick, you start firing at the largest creatures you see outside the cave.
Got it. What if the wires don't keep them in the cave?
Fitch asks.
Then make every shot of that crossbow count, because your life might depend on it,
Nick interjects.
Yeah, and Nick, don't forget that Fitch and I'll be right there. Yeah, don't shoot me, dude,
adds Fitch.
And I'm up here, guys, if you're taking shots at anything that flies,
Ellie adds.
Okay, I conclude. We're ready.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Fitch quips. I suppose it's best he gets the wires cracking out, while he still can. Nick gives a tug on the generator's pull start cord, and the first attempt does nothing. He fiddles around to push the primer a couple of times. One more pull, and the generator gurgles and then roars to life, settling into a moderate hum. Our fireworks consist of 1 16-shot 500-gram aerial repeater, appropriately called Battle Royale, 2 Roman candles with 5 shots each, and 5 individual aerial mortars. Ellie said they got them on a trip to Montana because they're mostly illegal in our state, but the Hagens have been elsewhere the last couple of years on the 4th of July and keep forgetting about them. We also have a large supply of bottle rockets, but I had to convince Fitch they weren't needed other than the half dozen screamers that might be good attention getters. He wanted to light them by hand and toss them into the air.
What an idiot.
Instead, I suggested we could set them on the lip of the BB gun barrel, propped against a rock. Fitch is waiting by the Battle Royale, ready to light the box's wick. I nod, and he doesn't hesitate a moment. I move over to the BB gun, loaded with the first screamer, but wait for Fitch's display to start. The fuse hisses, seems to quiet a moment as it reaches the inner container. And then a mortar rockets skyward, and a large chrysanthemum of red sparkles fills the sky. The cycle repeats again and again, and suddenly I become aware that Ellie, Nick, Fitch, and I are all just kids, staring in awe at the heavens, enjoying the beauty of it all.
You should go now, Kale, Nick says.
I grin, strike a match, and light my first screamer. Fitch moves on to more fireworks, and the night comes alive with noise, color, and crackles as our little clearing fills with the accompanying smell and haze. It's actually kind of fun, and a welcome distraction from the potential life or death part to follow. Wonder, excitement, and danger have set the mood. If these cosmic creatures really do like sounds and light, they'll be coming for sure.
As we approach home, the haze from the bombing grows increasingly intense. The substitution of familiar surroundings with a burnt landscape stretching to the south sickens me. It punctuates the reality of the situation. The roads home is undoubtedly gone, although it hasn't come into view yet. Emerging from the woods at the back of our property, I'm immediately distracted by the soldiers ahead of Colonel Harstead and me. Guns raised, they're advancing on something. I see it. A large cat-like creature lies at the side of the garage, apparently dead. I struggle to remember all of the kids' reports about which creatures they encountered. This one is a foreboding, stocky, four-legged animal with large paws and some similarities to big cats, but its hindquarters are excessively large. A gash in its skull is stained with darkened orange blood from some incredible blunt force. Kale and my kids did this? It's impossible to fathom. My fatherly instincts conjure rapid-fire images of the terror this encounter must have caused. For one of them to have had the wherewithal to grab a weapon, probably my axe, and survive such an encounter is astonishing. It's heart-wrenching, too. My empathy and admiration quickly turn to anger. This should not have been their job. Are your men going to kill it again? I poke Colonel Harstead. If I wasn't so angry, I might actually be amused at their tactical approach to the corpse. The comment disarms them a bit and draws a grimace from Colonel Harstead. One soldier circles the beast to the driveway, and his relaxing posture reverts to high alert. Sir, movement! He barks. There's another one in there! Another soldier affirms. Their rifles are drawn, and they look like they're ready to empty their rounds into my garage. My kids could be in there. Careful! I exclaim. I rush over, blowing through the colonel's outstretched hand meant to keep me back. Dr. Hagen! He barks. Don't go any further! I don't care. I run to the garage window, desperate to see the kids. Instead, I'm struck by the sight of a furry critter the size of a stack of bed pillows. Its eyes are beady, and it bears a row of teeth, but then seems to relax a bit. Its teeth recede, and its eyes turn curious. Fire when ready, Colonel? A soldier asks. No, no, no! I chastise. The kids said they had a friendly. They're probably in the house. You're not going to send rounds blindly into my home. That creature is a scientific marvel, and it's captured and secure. There's no need to shoot a captured creature. I give the orders, Dr. Hagen, Colonel Harstead reprimands, even while motioning for his men to stand down. Clear the house, he orders the two men with weapons. They swiftly move to the front door. Their activities are a distraction, as I want to absorb everything I can about this incredible animal. I look over in time to see one soldier holding open the storm door, while the other is ready to kick the main door in. I have a key, for Christ's sake, I yell. Holy hell, you guys need to get your act together. That's enough, Dr. Hagen, Colonel Harstead growls. Do I need to remind you that you're responsible for this mess, and it's your kids running all over causing problems? You need to get your... causing problems? I roar back as I get my keys out and hustle to the door. Did your men take that thing down and capture the animal in my garage? I unlock the door and am essentially shoved aside by the lead soldier. I want to follow them in, but Colonel Harstead grabs my arm. Let them clear it, he orders, trying his best to control his temper. I'm about to yell the kids' name when something catches my ear from outside. A gunshot? Was that gunfire? I ask. Colonel Harstead hears it too, and we exchange a glance. He frowns and raises a hand to signal for silence among his men, and we all listen intently. In the distance, there's faint popping. The radio man drifts back over to the driveway, looking off into the woods from where we came. All clear, comes the report from inside the house. It's empty. Colonel Harstead and I move over to the driveway. He motions for the radio. Border One, this is Command, he transmits. Border One, go ahead, Command, comes the reply. We're hearing possible gunfire. Confirm. Negative, Command. No reported contacts. Between the singular, intermittent pops comes a familiar screeching. Fireworks! I nearly laugh. The kids are setting off our stash of fireworks!
Lying in the rubble of my broken life, the realization settles in that I can't give up completely, not yet. Even though Kale's fate seems all but certain, and I fear his demise will inevitably be confirmed, I have to carry on and pray for a miracle. What I wouldn't give to hear his voice one more time. Wait a minute. I do hear voices. Not kids, though. Men. They're yelling. I have no interest in encountering anyone other than Kale. I roll carefully to crouch behind some debris and slowly rise for a furtive glimpse. It's Doc Hagen and some military guys. Of all people, I definitely don't want to be seen by him. I couldn't begin to explain things to him. I've got to slip away. They seem fixated on the thing in the garage. I'm going to make a break for it while they're distracted. I do my best to crouch low and move swiftly along the clearest path, heading for the unscorched woods, all while keeping an eye trained on them. They make their way toward the front of the house, disappearing from sight. I know Kale spends a lot of time in these woods, but of course, I haven't the foggiest clue where any of his hangouts might be. I reach a beaten path and follow it a good 100 yards when a noise stops me in my tracks. Gunfire? I keep moving, trying to do so quietly. The faint pops continue intermittently. It has to be gunfire or fireworks. I keep moving, trying to hear better. Soon, there is a distant... It's fireworks! Could it be Kale? It has to be! I take off running toward what I hope is an answer to my prayers. A lifeline for Kale and me.
We hope you've enjoyed Cosmic Creatures, a Spark Media production. This program was directed and executive produced by H.G. Zeisler, featuring the voice talents of Adam Anagnostou as Kale Rhodes, Mike Kelly as Russell Rhodes, John Yonker as Dr. Elliot Hagen, and Luke Langfelt as Major Roggie. Text copyright 2022 by Jason Kent Nord. Illustrations including cover and episode art by Meredith Tuvey. Sound design by Dan Steffens. Story edits by Emily Nord and H.G. Zeisler. A special thanks to our founding Spark storytellers. Rest assured that no animals, cosmic or earthly, were harmed in the production of this episode. Enjoyed what you heard? Check out more Spark stories and find out more about Spark Media on our website, sparkmedia.com. That's sparkmedia.com. Or check us out on Instagram or Facebook at Spark Media. Links and episode notes. Interested in telling stories? Apply to be a Spark storyteller today. We're looking for writers, editors, composers, voice talent, and more. It takes a village to tell a story, and we need you. Link in episode notes. Audio production copyright 2024 by Spark Media LLC, all rights reserved.